Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Recap Race Analysis here on the Cycling Dean Extra or the Cycling Dean podcast. And today we're talking about Paris-Roubaix, the hell of the north. And here to do all that is Patrick Blake, returned from Scotland with a better microphone. We read your comments, don't worry. Patrick, what exactly happened on the hell of the north in 2024?
Yes, we're back from a holiday. And yeah, first race was Roubaix, where there was a big fight for the breakaway, of course, because everybody knows the importance of it. But they were never really allowed that much of a gap because Alpecin decided to put the hammer down in some crosswinds, which meant that the race was split up with about, 150 kilometers to go or something, which meant that the group was already whittled down to 30, 40 riders, something like that. It wasn't a lot. By this time, we'd seen Jonathan Milan, I think, was a DNF. I think Viviani went down as well. Lots of riders had crashes, including Lawrence Rex. The original breakaway was caught. And also in all this, there was also Josh Tarlin got a very long sticky bead on, which meant that he got disqualified, which was quite unfortunate. Well, not unfortunate. The rules are the rules at the end of the day, but yes, he wasn't too happy about it. But anyway, going on with the race, we then had a very kind of interesting period from 150 to 100 to 50 kilometers to go, where we saw lots of attacks going. The group was slowly whittling down. We saw Van der Poel attacking a couple of times. We saw Pedersen with a puncture, but then getting brought back. And I think the main event of the day was we're going in to the Arenberg Trench. We were all thinking about this chicane, U-turn thing. And I don't know, I guess we'll talk about it once I've kind of finished my ramble here. But there was a lot of pace going into there. And we saw, I think it was Pedersen leading in. I think it was Mick van Dijker in second. Philipsen was there. Van der Poel's there. And we got to the end of that sector, and it was a group of four up the road containing Pedersen, Van der Poel, Philipsen, and Mick van Dijker. But then Philipsen had a puncture, so he went back to the second group, and then it all sort of came back together once more. And then we saw some more attacks going off of the front, which eventually kind of led to everything kind of going off the front, coming back together. Pollitt and Kung were off the front as well, with Jani Vermeersch, who was doing a very good job of marking moves today. He was a real outstanding performer alongside just Alpecin on the whole. But eventually it all came down to roughly 55 kilometers to go, and Van der Poel attacked on a seemingly not particularly hard sector, got a 10-second gap, and he just seemed to ride away. And there was just some group two dynamics with Vermeersch there and Philipsen was there, who were obviously kind of man-marking the serious threats. And Van der Poel's gap just seemed to go out to 30 seconds, to a minute, to a minute 30, etc. And then behind, we saw the attacks of, say, Pedersen, and other riders were wanting to secure their podium places. So we saw Pedersen, we saw Kung, we saw Philipsen, and we saw Pollitt going off the front with Piffy as well. Sadly, Piffy crashed on a corner, which was sad to see, considering that he's had a bit of a rough couple seasons, so it was a bit sad to see, but he did end up doing okay at the end. However, then we got into the Carrefour de l'Arbre, and I think that was where Kung really got distance. Philipsen decided to roll through, and then we just had Pedersen, Pollitt, and Philipsen behind in group two. We came into the Roubaix Velodrome, the very typical lovely finish, just a big monument of cycling. Van der Poel gets his two kind of 1.5 laps of honour. Really great to see. He crosses over the line after a 55-kilometre, 47-plus-kilometre-an-hour solo victory, longest breakaway victory for like 30 years, I think the commentators were saying. And then behind, we saw a sprint amongst the second group, which meant that the final result of the day was that Mathieu van der Poel won ahead of his teammate Jasper Philipsen. It's deja vu of 2023, Scott. Then we had Pedersen in third, Pollitt, Kung, Jani Vermeersch, Lawrence Piffy, despite his crash finishing in seventh, Tim van Dijker in eighth with a late flyer, Jordi Meus in ninth, and Søren Vardenschulte in tenth. It was a very chaotic race, and I'm sure that I missed a couple of details in there, but the long and short of it is Van der Poel attacked. Van der Poel's better than everybody else, and he wins Paris-Roubaix in back-to-back years in the World Champs bands.
Yeah, well, at least this time we didn't stump. Well, in the previous show, we were saying that, well, I was very stat-focused with him winning Milan-San Remo. that didn't happen, as we know. But in terms of this one, I put it on Twitter as well. He becomes the first world champion to, defend his title. He becomes the first defense of his title since 2009 when Tom Boonen did it. First world champion to win Paris-Roubaix since Peter Sagan. First world champion to win Flanders and Roubaix in the same year, being world champion since 1962. But yeah, Patrick, this win, Alpecin absolutely again schooling everyone, I think. Even Vermeersch coming in the top 10 and Philipsen again a 1-2. Was there any way to stop Mathieu van der Poel today not winning? Even through an Arenberg, he looked flawless.
I really don't think. If it wasn't van der Poel, I think it was just going to be somebody else from Alpecin. I think that, honestly, it could have been Philipsen. If things didn't work out for van der Poel, it could have been Philipsen, let's face it. Or it could have even been Vermeersch, because he was just fantastic as well today, to be honest. Stopping van der Poel, I think, was just going to be really hard today. Alpecin really took the race by the scruff of the neck, and I think they fully deserve the victory today, considering the amount of work. I mean, was there ever really a time where Alpecin wasn't on the front of the peloton? If you consider that, like, van der Poel breaking away for 55 kilometers at the front of the race, it just seemed like Alpecin were absolutely everywhere. It was very 2010s quick step strategy. It was, you know, it, like you say, everybody else was just schooled today. It was really just a losing battle. I think it was going to be Alpecin's day, no matter what.
I mean, well, yeah, second, Jasper Philipsen. Maybe this was like a repayment for Milan-San Remo, where Macho helped him. And I mean, he looked so cool, like Philipsen in that group. He was doing no work, even just attacked them just to like tease them a bit at one point. But yeah, I think a good result by Philipsen again. Milan-San Remo now this, and yeah, De Brugge to punt it. But in terms of Lidl Trek, I think that is probably the team we should talk about. Mads Pedersen finishing third place. He'll probably not be... Well, he won't be unhappy with it because he finished fourth last year. Didn't get on the podium in Milan-San Remo, but yet another podium, which is great. Maybe he can step it up next year. Who knows? He's not had the best run-in with that Dwarthold-Flandrin crash. But in terms of Lidl Trek, they said they had a strong team. But if you threw a Stöven and a Alex Kirsch in there when they had that three-four-man move, I think they could have maybe brought it back, but could have, would have, should have, as you say.
Yeah, it was. I think Lidl Trek were just a little bit damaged going into today, like you say, with the men, which they sadly had injured throughout the kind of Cobble Classic season. Maybe it could have made a difference. I do think that it would have done. But I think that Pedersen did the best job that he could have done today, finishing third. If you say that realistically, van der Poel's always going to do something like this. And Philipsen is just marking behind. He didn't have to really pull at all until he kind of decided in the last 20Ks to give it a go, because he thought it would be better to work with a group of kind of like three or four people rather than trying to control a group behind. Yeah, Philipsen was always going to kind of roll you for second place. So I think that third place, it may seem a little bit rubbish for him now, but I think that it was a very good result all in all. I think Pedersen, considering how he was at Flanders last weekend after that Dwarsdorf, you know, that was not that long ago that all that happened. I think that Lidl Trek can be happy with their result today.
I mean, did you see the racecraft that was happening by Mads Pedersen to try and block Jasper Philipsen in? I thought that was pretty good. You tried to use Nils Pollard to block in Philipsen. But yeah, I mean, how would you do it? How do you beat Jasper Philipsen in that situation? They have Mathieu van der Poel up the road. You have Jasper Philipsen marking you every move. How on earth are you going to finish second? Like, your best result is third. Like,
I just don't think there was a way to beat Philipsen. I think you can't be too upset about it. Philipsen is, at the end of the day, one of, if not the fastest sprinter in the world. And the fact that he had a little bit more of a free ride just meant that he had fresher legs at the end of the day. So it's just basic cycling. Kind of, you saved your legs, you saved energy, so therefore you've got more energy for a sprint.
Yeah, but in terms of the debutants, because there was a few debutants here, including Tom Pidcock, quite surprisingly, after we saw those very horrifying scenes of him being carried out of a bus in the Tour of Bus Country. But what did you think of Laurent Pithy? Because I thought he did a sublime jump in Mio Pro.
Yeah, I think that when you look at Pithy's results for the Cobble Classics, they don't accurately reflect how well he's been riding. Because you'll see results like 40-something, 30-something, but think back to when he was in that moving Kerner, when he was in the moving Gent-Wevelgem, when he was probably going to do well in Dwars Door if it wasn't for his mistimed puncture. You think that all of those likely would have converted to, you know, the Gent-Wevelgem would have been a podium. The Kerner-Brussel-Kerner would have been a podium. Dwars Door might have been a podium as well. The fact that he finally gets this good result feels like very, very, very worthy. He deserves a good result. And I think it's really great that, yeah, as a debutant, finishing 7th place, despite the crash as well. Like, the crash as well, which put him back with Vermeersch. You know, he would have been in this, he might have been in this front group fight for a top 5 as a debutant who's like 21. I mean, gosh, he's got such a great future as a Cobble Classics rider. So that was really impressive too. Like you say, lots of impressive debutants. I was really happy to see also the Van Dijker twins of Ms. Melissa bike without, like, Laporte had a problem early on, without a Wout here. I think that those two really got their opportunity to kind of show their ability in the team. And I think that was really great to see as well, was the Van Dijker twins getting their opportunity to do something too.
All right, Tim Van Dijker finishing 8th. And that 7th place, it seems like that's a bad place to finish now, because wasn't it John Degenkolb finished 7th last year and he crashed after the nudge with the Alpecin guys? But what teams are going to be disappointed about the results of today? If you're thinking with a rational mind as well, it's not like you're saying, oh, okay, they were going to win this race.
I mean, you do say okay, but I do think the Misato might have expected a little bit more out of
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I think maybe Misato might have expected more. Jacob and Lula also just were, you know, they were talking a big game about Walshide. He's been consistent in this race the last couple of years, so that was probably a little bit of a shame. I think that Ineos probably would be a little bit disappointed. I know Pidcock was up there, but it didn't really translate to anything. The fact that your main man in the race was the one who crashed earlier in the week in Basque Country isn't that great. Also, with Tarling obviously getting his disqualification, who knows where he would have finished at the end of the day. But yeah, I remember in our preview, I said Sheffield for like a 2nd place or something. I don't know why he wasn't here. I think that he would have been quite a good person. But Soudal Quickstep as well, probably a little bit disappointed considering that I don't really know where the top finisher was, but that wasn't, you know, too great for them. EF, Movistar, Israel. I mean, there's a few teams probably didn't get anything out of the day because they just missed a move. I don't think people were really expecting the race to break up with 150k to go. I think they were expecting breakaway formation had gone, everybody's going to chill out, and it's going to go hard just before the first cobble sector. But I think the crosswinds really caught some people off guard.
Yeah, it was really windy, to be honest. You could see it on the flights completely. We might as well finish with Mathieu van der Poel. In terms of what next for this man, he's lining up to go to Amstel Gold and Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Does this, if he does that, I think we should just like give him the key to cycling.
Yeah, he's literally... He seems pretty unstoppable at the moment, considering that his results this year have been 10th, 1st, 2nd, 1st, and 1st. Amstel, it's probably within his grasp. Let's face it, I don't think Poggi's going. And with the injury of Remco and Roglic and Jonas, very sadly, at Basque Country, I think Van der Poel's got a pretty good shot of taking Amstel Gold once more. Liège... Like I said, that list of injuries, which I just rattled off. Yeah, it's not out of the question. It depends. how he goes. It wouldn't surprise me if he podiumed that race, to be honest. Liège, that is. Just because there's no... Well, I don't know how Roglic or Remco are going to recover from their crashes, and even if they do, how they're going to perform after crashing. Why not? Vanderpool might very well do good at Liège-Bastogne-Liège as well. But I do think that Amstel, yes, I think Amstel's definitely going to be a good one. They've got Philipsen there as well, so maybe it'll be another one too, who knows.
Yeah, well, we're going to be doing the preview show as well here on the channel or on the podcast if you're listening, so make sure to come back for that. That'll be next week, so look out for that. And the Echelon Cycling Podcast is happening as well, so episode 60-something. On Monday, so look out for that. But and I guess Patrick, I'll do cycling Velo Games videos coming up as well. But yeah, that's basically it for us. Hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and we will see you for the preview show here on the channel.